Begin the current daf Masechet Baba Basra daf Ayin. Begin 3 lines down by the top of the Yomid, where the Gemara continues in the related discussion of the previous daf, and that is, we had mentioned the previous Mishnah that certain things are included with a sale that's unspecified of a field, and certain things are not included. Now the Gemara also spoke about cases of when someone is selling a field, which generally in the sale of the field would include regular trees. But if he says, except for the trees, so the Gemara explains, so which trees would that be included? What's considered a tree? What's if he has only certain types of trees? But that was the Gemara's discussion. Now, the Gemara continues in a related discussion, as the Gemara says, let's say someone's selling a field, and he says, chutz mi charev, except for the what's called the charev hamurkev, a grafted carob tree, which plainly, he says, is that specific one. Or chutz mi sadin, or except for the sadin hashikama, which is already the older sycamore tree, that, and he picks up plainly that specific one. Now, there were actually many charuvim and sadon, and many carob and sycamore trees. The question is, mahu, what would halacha be? Now, what's the question? The question is, because had this seller been silent, actually those trees would not have been included in the sale of the field. Because, as we said in our Mishnah, they're considered chashim, and they're not included in this on the specified sale of the field. But now that he specifically picked one of the trees and said that that should not be included in the sale, then that's where you could say, and the Gemara explains, the question is, do you say, oh, I say charev would like honey. Oh, okay, it's only that carob tree that he's keeping for himself, that the buyer will not acquire. So maybe then you'll say that the other carob trees, then he by default, by inference, would acquire. Or maybe the Gemara says that no, that the fact that he specified this one should not be sold with it, that does not ruin his superiority in the sale, but even the truth is that even the other carob trees, the buyer does not acquire, because the fact that the seller wanted to add to his strength what he could maintain for himself, where he specifies and he says, well, that carob tree I'm for sure not selling, that doesn't tell us that we should then diminish his strength he has in the rest of the carob trees. So then what is his words coming to say? Yeah, none of the carob trees are included in the sale. Why are you picking out that one? So that we could say that when he's adding this word of chutz, except for this carob tree, it's coming to actually add on a strength that's not being specified directly, like the halacha that we learned in the Mishnah of Samach Dalem and Aleph, where maybe he's coming to say that he wants not only that tree itself, but even the pathway to get to that tree. Where the Mishnah there told us that, even though Rabbi Akiva says that when someone sells, he gives everything to the sale, but even he agrees when he says, except for these things, which anyways they would be excluded, he says that the reason why the person's adding the extra words is that he doesn't have to then purchase from the consumer a path how to get to the things that he maintained for himself. So maybe here also, when the guy's saying, except for that carob tree, what he's saying is that not only that carob tree, because of course he actually gets all the carob trees, what he's essentially saying is that I even want to hold on to a path to get to that carob tree, but he's not coming to exclude the rest. And as Rashbam says, not only could you say that according to Rabbi Akiva, but even according to Rabbanan, you could say that why does he say except for that carob tree? Is because that one he really wants more than the rest. And he doesn't want to have to go and litigate and try to make sure that he's going to get that carob tree. So it's regarding that carob tree that he specifies in the document, what's called Shufar Dishtar, which we had in the previous daf, to make sure this one for sure you're not going to contest. But regarding the rest of the carob trees, he wasn't concerned to put that into the writing, into the document. But that's because he was confident regarding the primary halacha of our Mishnah that a carob tree is not sold together with a field, but that doesn't tell us by inference that he was agreeing to sell the rest of the carob trees. What's halacha? Do we infer that only this one he's holding on, but not the rest? Or no, would he still hold on to the rest too? So Malay, so on that, Rav Sheshesh responded, and he says, Loikana, that you're right, that the buyer does not acquire not only the one that he specified the seller is keeping for himself, but all the carob trees he doesn't get. Now, on this halacha Rav Sheshet, the Gemara says Esvei. So he asked him for the following price. The price says, similarly the same case, that if he's selling him his whole field, and there's carob trees and the sycamore trees, and he says, chutz micharav plaini, except for that carob tree, or chutz misadin plaini, except for that matured sycamore tree. So that says the price. So like kana, so then the buyer does not acquire it. So on that asks the Rav Acha Bar Huna from Rav Sheshet, my love, isn't the price telling us, only that carob tree that he held on to himself, that the buyer does not acquire. But it sounds like that the other carob trees he would acquire, not like you're saying that he doesn't get any of them. And that Amalei, Rav Sheish has responded, he says, Lai, no. Afila shachar ruben nami lakana. No, actually, even the other carob trees, he does not acquire. In other words, he's explaining when the Braisa says, Lai kana, it was actually going on the other carob trees. And for sure, the one that he's retaining for himself. And that is what the Braisa is coming to teach us, that he does not lose his rights in the other carob trees because he only specified one that he's holding on to. And that's actually the chiddush of the Braisa, Rav Sheshes explains. And says Rav Sheshes Teide, you should know that the buyer does not acquire any of the carob trees because he proves based on logic. He says, look, Dilo Amalei, let's say the seller would tell to the buyer, Sadi Mechurlach, I'm selling you my field, Chutz Misad Plainis, except for that other field which is near the boundary of that field that I'm selling you. So on that says Rav Sheshes, wait a minute. Hahihu Delay Kani, so it's only that other field that the buyer is not going to acquire? But all the other fields that this seller has, the buyer will acquire? That doesn't make sense. He only is selling him that one field and no other fields. So, rather, it's obvious that that the buyer does not acquire any other fields because the seller told him, I'm only selling you this one field. And that's not including any other fields in that sale. So because he said something imbecilic by saying, oh, except for that other field, we don't go ahead and say, oh, so okay, so he's going to be selling everything else besides that one field that he's excluding? That's not true. He's only selling him one field, not two fields. So therefore, says Rav Sheshes, the same thing's also over here. When he's selling him a field, Laikana, he does not acquire any other. In other words, he's not selling him the Charuvim and the Sadanan, because as we said in the previous stuff, they're considered like their own distinct Sada, as we learned from the parasha of Avraham Avinu by Ma'arusa Machpelah. And therefore, although that he unnecessarily excluded one of the trees, we don't say, oh, to infer that he sold the rest, because they're different fields. They've never sold, they only sold this field and not any other carob trees. That's one version of this discussion. Vekudarma, those that say that Baimene Rav Acha Bar Hunim Rav Sheshes, that he actually asked him a different question. Similar, but different. Let's say he said, I'm selling you this field, Chutz Michatzi Charv Plane, except for half of that specific carob tree. Or Chutz Michatzin Sad Plane, except for half of that specific sycamore tree. That is what his question was, Mahu. What's the halacha gonna be in that case? In other words, according to this version, it was obvious to the questioner that if, let's say, he said except for that whole sycamore tree, that of course he would not acquire any of the other ones. But the question is, what's if he only says half of that one? Then the question is, shachar ruven vadi lakani. So for sure, as we're saying, the other carob trees, the buyer for sure would not acquire, as we said before, because those things are considered a different field. But hamasha shayir ba'is acharv kani, but maybe what he left over from that half of the tree that he said he wants to acquire, to hold on to himself, that maybe that other half that he's not holding on to himself, that the buyer would acquire? Maybe even in what he left over, the other half, although he says I want to hold on to half, the other half still would not be sold with the sale of the field. Even on that case, in this version, Rav Sheshes says, no, the buyer does not acquire even the other half of the tree which he didn't say he wants to hold on to. On that Eisve, on that Rav Acha Bar Huna asked him for the following Braisa. Braisa says the same case. It says, Chutz Michatzi Charv Plani. If the seller is selling and he says, I'm going to sell you the field except for half of that carob tree, Chutz Michatzi Sadim Plani, except for that half of that sycamore tree. So, Shachar Ruben Loikano. So, the buyer has not acquired the other carob trees. Now, my love, says Rav Acha Bar Huna, isn't it that it's saying, Shachar Ruben Hod Loikano? It's only the other carob trees that the buyer does not acquire. But it sounds like, but the other half of the carob tree of which the seller did not say he wants to hold on to, that the buyer does acquire. Amalei, and Rav Sheshes responded, lo, no. Even that other half which he didn't specify that he's holding on to, even that the buyer does not acquire. In other words, Rav Sheshes explaining when the Braisa says that Shachar Ruben Loikana, the other carobs he does not acquire, everything he's calling Shachar Ruben, even the other half that he left over that he didn't specify. And that explains Rav Sheshes, as like in the first version, he says, Teda, you should know this. Because the Ilo Amalei, picture, imagine if the seller would tell the buyer, Sadi Mechur Lecha, I'm selling you my field, which is this one field, Chutz Michatzi Sad Plani, except for the half of some other field. So what? Hahu Hu Delaikana, so you would say it's only that half of that other field that he's saying, I'm not selling you, that the buyer would not acquire, Ha'idach Kana, but the other half he would acquire? Obviously not. Nothing else is included in the sale besides this field that he's selling him. Rather, obviously, he would not acquire it. So he's not going to acquire even the other half of the tree that he didn't specify that the seller that he wants to hold on to. Now the Gemara continues, and as Rashbam explains, the reason why the Gemara is introducing this halacha over here is because on the top of this amud, which we quoted from the previous daf, we had quoted the Dayani Gaila, the judges of the diaspora, which refers to Shmuel and Karna. So therefore, the Gemara introduces this discussion, which will also demonstrate the opinion of Dayani Gaila. So the Gemara says, "Bayimineir of Amr Merav Chizdi says, Hamafkir itzlchaver bishtar, someone deposits something by his friend with a document. In other words, they write in the document how much he deposited by this person, and witnesses sign on this. Now, the relevancy of a document is that now the one who is watching the deposit can never more say what's called lahadam, which stands for loy hayu dvar ma'ilam. This never happened. You never gave me anything. He can't say that anymore because there's witnesses who could verify that a deposit was given to him. So he can never claim that nothing, that this never happened at all. Now, but the question is as follows. V'omar loy, then the one who is watching the deposit tells to the owner of the deposit, whether it be today or tomorrow at some point, he tells him, Hechzartem loch, I already returned it to you. Yes, you gave me a deposit to watch. He cannot deny that. There were witnesses that he was given the deposit. He says, I returned it to you. Mahu, what's the halacha? Now, the question of this is relevant because as the Gemara says in Cheskes Abatim, as we learned in Memheim Abayz, that if someone deposits something by his friend, even with witnesses, so we know that deposit happened, he does not have to return it in front of witnesses. Now, the question is over here, but yeah, he usually could say he returned it because we don't need witnesses, but here, the owner of the deposit is holding a document. So what's the question? So the Gemara explains. Do we say, migudi bayu amar nensu mehemen, since, which is called a migui, he has what's called a koyach hatayin, he could have made a claim that he would have said that, yeah, you're right, you gave me the deposit, I was watching it, but an oinus happened, which there was a storm that and came and just crushed the thing and just swallowed up into the sea. So then he would be believed. He would be exempt in such a situation if he said it was an oinus, whereas the Gemara will later on explain if he takes an oath. As the Pasuk says, regarding a shomer, unless he's a shayel that he borrowed, if he's just watching it, even if he's getting paid, the Pasuk says, Shavuos Hashem to Yibin Shneim, that he takes an oath and he's exempt if an oinus happens, where the Torah believes the one who's watching it to claim that it was an oinus. So therefore, since he could be exempt from this deposit by claiming it was an oinus, so here also he's claiming that, you're right, it wasn't an oinus, I returned it to you. He's also believed, but as the Gemara will explain, also with taking an oath, that he returned it. Now, why would we believe him? Because of what's called mali l'shaker. Why should I lie? Meaning, why? What do you think? You think I'm lying that I didn't return it to you? If I wanted to, I could have exempted myself with a false claim by saying there was an oinus, and because I didn't want to lie and I'm saying the truth that I returned to you, so I shouldn't be believed. Of course, I'm believed. That's what's called a migui. I could have said a claim that I would be believed. So even though regarding returning it, maybe I'm not believed, because as we'll see in the Gemara's second option, that if I returned it to you, then I should have the document back. But believe me, because I could have said it was an oinus, and then the fact that you have a documentation doesn't mean anything, because I'd be exempt with that. So believe me when I say I return it to you. That's one option. Or maybe, Amar Lei, that no, that the mafkid, the owner of the object, could tell the one who was watching of him, Shtarche biyadi my bayi, your document, what's it doing in my hand? In other words, if it's true that you really gave me back the deposit, you would not have allowed me to hold on to the documentation had you returned it to me. Rather, you would have said you need the document back, because then you're going to tell me that I'm just going to go ahead and claim it from you in the future. Say, look, here's the document, give me back the deposit. Now, so essentially, this second option of the question is that it's saying that even though you have what's called a mali l'shaka, you have a claim of a migui that why should I lie? I'd be believed to say an oinus. But when that's b'makom eidim, when that migui is refuted by witnesses, then you're not believed. You can't say mali l'shaka. Same thing over here. You're refuted with your kayach of saying that you could have said that you returned it, because then why do I have the documentation? You're not believed to say this claim of that you returned it, because the document refutes the fact that you returned it, because then you would have the document and not me, the mafkid. So that was the question that Rav Amram asked from Rav Chizda. So Amalei Mehemet, Rav Chizda responded, and he says that the one who was watching, the watchman, is believed to say that he returned it. Now that Rav Amram asked back, but why? That was the other side of the question. But let the mafkid tell the nifkid, then shtarcha b'yadi my bayi. How could you believe him with his migu that he could have said that it was an oynis? But that's called a mali l'shaker, and this b'makam edim is being refuted by the witnesses of the document, saying, so why does he have the documentation? If he really returned it, he should have the document. So Malay, so that Rav Chizkiya responded, he says, wait a second. Well, Tameich, according to your reasoning that you're asking, v'chi amalei nentzu, when the Nifgad says that it was an oynis, something, a storm happened and it just got swallowed up by the ocean, mimatzi amalei shtarcha b'yadi my bayi, do you think that the Mafkid could say, well, I'm holding on to the documentation? So therefore, Rav Chizkiya is responding, as he's saying, that's why the Mafkid cannot make a claim of shtarcha b'yadi my bayi. Why? Because essentially what he's saying is, it's not considered a malu l'shaka b'makam edim. Now the reason for this is, because why? Isn't it ironclad? You can't make such a claim. He has the documentation. Not true. Because since it's normal that a person, for example, the mafkid, when let's say he really did return the object, so the mafkid could try to wiggle his way out and say, oh, thanks for returning my object. So the guy says, okay, give me back the document. I don't want you coming tomorrow to court and saying I never returned to you. He says, oh, I lost the document. So what, he's not going to return it? He'll return it, and they'll say, okay, the guy lost the document. And he's never going to return the document to the Nifgad. That's one point. Moreover, the Nifgad himself wasn't really so concerned about the Mafgad holding on to the documentation. Why? Because even he knows he returned it. And even if the Mafgad's going to come and say, hey, you never returned it, look, I have the document, he knows he could always exempt himself by claiming that it was an oynis. So therefore, that's Rav Chizkiya responding is saying, but if the guy would say an oynis, Shtarcha b'yadi wouldn't do anything. So therefore, it's not a refutation. It's not considered like, oh, he must be lying when he's saying mal l'shaker because we can't believe what he's saying. Yeah, had he said oynis, he would be believed, but what he's saying he not believe is not true because could be he did return it. But the guy claimed he didn't have his document to return it to him at that time. And moreover, he wasn't so concerned about that because he knew he could always say a tainus of oynis, and therefore, we do believe him with that migui of mal l'shaker that he could have said it was an oynis, even though he's saying that he returned it and he's believed. Now, but whereas, like Rashbam explains, if let's say someone lent someone money with a document, then the borrower cannot say that he paid it back, which would be the equivalent of saying I returned the deposit, but here in the loan, because then the lender could tell him that, wait a second, then why do I have your documentation by me? And by a loiver, there is no migoy over there, because even if the loiver would say, well, nensu, the money that you lent me, an oynis came and swallowed it up, he would still have to pay, because what's called mivaloitza nenu, the money of the loan, is not like a deposit that he's just watching and he's exempt by an oynis. It's actually owned by the borrower, and he owns money to the lender, no matter what happens to the money that he had. So therefore, by a loan, it would be different, but by regarding a deposit, that's what Rav Chizkiya is explaining, that he is believed to say, I returned the money to you. Now, on that, asks Rav Amram back, it says, but Amalei said to him as Ketinta Medbeis, Saif Saif, but at the end of the day, Ki Amalei Nensu, so you're believing him when he says he returned it because he has a migui, he could have said that it was an oynis. And then, of course, he would believe, like a Shemechina, Shemesacha, he's believed to say it was an oynis. But even then, as Rav Amram, Lav Shvuabai, doesn't he at least need to make an oath to that effect? Now, here you're saying that you believe him when he says he returned it, seemingly without an oath. But the problem is, the whole reason why we believe him when he says he returned it, which we shouldn't believe him because the guy has documentation, is because he could have said it was an oynis. But that shouldn't be exempting him without an oath, because even with an oynis, which is why you're believing him, which he could have said that, is only like it says in the pasuk, "Shuvus Hashem tibin shneim." He has to take an oath to that effect. So that answers Rav Chizkiya. He says, you're right. No, hachanami, my name, what did I mean when they said that we believe the watchman that he returned the deposit is Nemen Bishvo. You're right. He has to swear to that effect, which is not going to be any better than the taina he could have made, which would then is why we're believing him, which would have been the taina of an oynis, which he has to swear to that effect. Says the Gemara Lema, let's say that this halacha Rav Chizkiya, which says that the shomer is believed to say that he returned, even though the owner of the deposit has the document, is beplukta dana tanoi, is actually contingent on the following machlokes tanoi. The tanoi will end the brisa. It says that shtar kis is a document of an iska investment. For example, let's say Reuven gave money to Shimon, where he gave the seed money to Shimon. Shimon didn't have any of his own money, but Shimon's going to do all the legwork. So one guy's providing the money, one guy's doing the work, and they're going to split the profits. Now, Reuven wrote a documentation how much he gave to Shimon, and then Shimon dies. Now, Reuven comes and produces that document, and he's hayitze al yisayim. He's producing it against now the orphans of the guy that he gave the iska money to go ahead and claim the pekadon, the deposit that he gave to their father. Now, the orphans are claiming that maybe our father returned the money to you. Or even if they're claiming we know definitely our father returned it to you. Now, what's important to understand is that the reason why we're discussing specifically a case of a shtar kiss, of what's called the iska, is, which is actually, as we'll explain shortly, is half deposit money, half loan money, is because had it been a generic loan that Reuven gave to Shimon, and then Shimon died, so everyone would agree that Reuven would be allowed to swear and collect the entire value of the document from the orphans. The reason for that is because the fathers of the orphans would have no claim in regards to Reuven, the lender. And he wouldn't be able to claim Nensu, it was an einus, because an einus by a loan, you still have to pay up. Rather, Reuven would swear that he didn't get any money back from the borrower, and he would be able to collect. Now, because of, let's say, for example, that the borrower would claim that, okay, you have to, in other words, really he's allowed to collect what it says in the document when he produces it. But let's say the Shimon, who ended up dying, let's say when he was alive, he would say, okay, but first swear to me that I didn't pay you up. So then, as the Gemara says in Sefer Shavuos, Daf Mem Aleph, that would make the Reuven, the lender, have to swear. So the same thing applies to the orphans of Shimon, who they don't know how to make any claims. So then that's what the Besdin does, what's called Tanin and Lahu, we claim for them. Any claim their father could have made, we make for them. So therefore, yes, that would make Reuven, the lender, have to swear, but ultimately he'd be able to collect the entire debt that's owed to him. That's it would be a loan. But here where we're discussing something that's not totally a loan. Rather, half of it is a loan and half of it is a deposit, like all monies that are given for what's called the iskar, for when one guy's giving the money, the other guy's doing the work, which they split the profits, as the Gemara is going to explain. So that's where we have the following machlekes. Dayana Gaila Amri, the judges of the diaspora, they say, which refers to Shmuel and Karna, that Nishba Begoyba Kula, even in this case, the lender could swear that none of it was paid up to him, and he collects all of it from the orphans. Whereas with the Yoni Eretz Yisrael, I mean the judges of their Eretz Yisrael, which refers to Rabbam and Rabbasi, as the Gemara says in the first paragraph of Masechet Sanhedrin, they say that no nishba v'goyvim mechtze, can only swear and collect half of it. Now explains the Gemara, before it explains how they're arguing in the halacha of Chizda, that udukule alma islur dinar doi. Both the Yoni Goyle and the Yoni Eretz Yisrael, they all hold the halacha of the Nardoins, where the Amri Nardoi. Nardoin said, as it's brought in Bob Metzia and Paragam Makabal, that high iska, which is what we're referring to when we call the shtar kiss, this iska investment, which is where somebody gives someone else the money to work with, and then they split the profits, the halacha is that that's considered in Jewish law as palga milva, as half of it as a loan, which that makes the responsibility on the recipient of the money, the one who's doing the work, that's his liability, where that's actually the part that he takes his half of the profits from. And the other half is actually considered a deposit by him, which therefore that if, let's say there's an einus, that's not going to be his liability, because that's actually the half that the mafkid takes his half of the profits from. Now, the reason why this is, as the Gemara there explains, that the Rabbanan made a takana regarding this type of iska investment that would be good both for the borrower and for the lender, meaning the one who's providing the money, we call him the malva, the one who's taking the money, we call him the lev, where then there's a shared responsibility and liability of the money, where if it gets lost or if it gets stolen, neither one of them is going to take the entire loss, rather it's going to be split between the two of them. So therefore, that's how it always generally is, that half of the money is considered a loan by that person, where and half of it is going to be a deposit. Now, because of that, the one who's giving the seed money has to take, if there's a loss, two-thirds of the loss. The reason for that is because since he's splitting equally the gain, then he has to take at least a larger share if there's a loss, so that it shouldn't be a problem of ribis, because not only is he lending the guy money, which half of it is a loan, additionally, that guy is also doing work, not only in his half of the money, but also in the guy who's lending the money, in his half of the money too. So that would be ribis, because he's getting back not only the loan money that he gave him, but also he's getting back certain services from that person. So because of that, so the one who's the giver of the money has to accept more of a liability of a loss, more than half. That would be considered payment for the recipient for that work that he's doing for the half of the owner of the money's half of his money. Or another approach is that actually that the one who's giving the money only takes half the loss. He shares equally, but then in the gain, he could only take a third, and the recipient of the money takes two thirds, so that again, this that he's taking a larger profit margin, that's going to be the gain and the profit for the work that he's doing for the one who's lending him the money's half, again, which are two different approaches to alleviate the problem about ribis, that it shouldn't be interest on the loan that he's giving him, as the Gemara explains in Ezu Neshach, Daf Samaches Amud Beis. So the Gemara says that everyone agrees to Nardoyans that that's what actually is with this money of the Shtar Kis, that half of it is a milv and half of it is a bekon. So then the Gemara continues and concludes, so my lav baha, so isn't it regarding the half of the bekon money? Because we're saying that everyone agrees that half is sure he could collect. The question is, could he collect all of it? So why half yes and maybe half not, which is there what they're disputing, is because it's regarding the half of the pekud money that that's where kamiflagi, that's where they're disagreeing, the Dayan Agun, the Dayan Eretz Yisrael, in regards to the halacha of Rav Chisda, who said regarding when there is money that was deposited by someone, if he's believed to say that it was returned. Meaning, regarding the half of the money that was a loan, there everyone agrees that the lender could swear and collect it. Why? Because even if the father was alive, he would not be able to claim, oh, I returned that loan money to you. Because then the lender would just say very simply, shtarcha biyade my bai, then why do I have the documentation? Moreover, he doesn't have a claim of a taina of migui, because even if, let's say it was an einus, and the money that was loaned to him beyond his control was taken from him, he would still have to pay that back to the lender. Because it's a loan by him, which he has all responsibility for. So therefore, regarding the part of the loan, everyone agrees that the lender could swear and collect. Same thing if he's not alive and there's orphans, like anyone who's coming to collect from the assets of Yisayim that has to swear. But as regards to the half that's a deposit, as we said, when there's an iska, half of it is considered as a loan and half is considered as a deposit. It's regarding the half of a deposit that they dispute, and it's regards to the halacha of Rav Chisda. What's the machlokes? The Marasavar, the Dayan Agayla, who they said that the lender could swear and collect all of it from the orphans, they don't hold like Rav Chisda, who says that the Nifgad, the one who is watching it, is believed to say that he returned it. To the contrary, even if the father was alive, he would not be believed to say that he returned it. And even though that there's a migui of a claim that, but I could have said that it's an einus, and then they would be believed, that's like what we said, not like Rav Chisda, which was the other side of the question. No, because Motzi Amalei, because the lender could tell him, Shtar Chabiyadi my bai, what is your document doing by me? And therefore, since the one who is watching is not believed, so therefore the lender could swear and collect all of it from the orphans, even the half of the pekodin. Whereas the Marsab, the Dayan Eretz Yisrael, they held like Rav Chisda, where if the father had been alive, he would be believed to claim that he returned it. Why would he be believed? Because he has a migu that he could have said, Nensu, like Rav Chisda said. And therefore, they say that loyamri, that therefore the other one, meaning the lender, cannot say, oh, shtar chabiyodi my boy, then why do I have the document? Because, yeah, you have the document, but like we said, maybe you, when I returned it to you, you said you don't have it. Also, I wasn't so concerned that you have the document because I could say nensu. And therefore, just like the father could have made such a claim that he returned it, so too we do what's called tanin lehu, we make the same claims for the orphans who don't know how to claim. But just additionally, the orphans have to swear what's called Shvuas HaYershin, as the Gemara says in Masechta Shvuas, where they swear that at least we don't know otherwise, our father never told us anything in regards to this. So again, that's why they hold that the lender could only swear and collect half of it, which is the half that's the loan, where there is no Miku, there he's not believed. But regarding the half that's a Pekadon, they're like Rav Chisda said, that they are believed. So similarly, the halacha of Rav Chisda is contingent on this Machlekes Dayan HaGoyel and Dayan Eretz Yisrael. Says the Gemara, loy. No, not necessarily. The Kula Alma Isl Rav Chisda, we could say that actually everyone holds like Rav Chisda, that the Nifka, the one who was watching it, is believed to say that I returned the deposit to you. Now, so what's the understanding then of the Dayan HaGoyel who say you could collect all of it, even the part of the Pekadon, which seemingly we should say that him and his children are believed to say that we returned it to you. This is what they're disagreeing about. The Marsavar, the Dayan HaGoyel, they held that you're right. In general, we hold the Rav Chisda that the one who is watching is believed to say, I return the deposit to you. But regarding orphans, you cannot say that. Meaning, although we generally say Tanin Lahu, in this case, we're not going to say. Meaning, because although the father would be believed to say he returned it, but since the one who gave the money has the document, and moreover, the father, at least before he died, did not say, I already paid you back. So in this situation, we're not going to be Tanin Liyaswa. We're not going to make the claim for the orphans which their father could have made. Why? Because in Isa de Pare, if it was really true that he had already paid it up and returned it to the lender, to the one who gave the seed money, me mehava amar, the father would have said at the time of his death to tell his children that although he has the document, I already paid him up. So therefore, since in this situation where there's two flaws working against the defendants, one is that the one who gave the money has the documentation, and moreover, the defendant, the father who passed away, didn't tell his children when he died that it was already paid up. So in that situation, even Rav Chisda would agree, at least that's the way that the Yonah Gaila learning, that the lender could swear and collect all of it. Whereas in Mar Sava, but the Yonah Eretz Yisrael held that no, Eimer Malach HaMavos, Huda Anse, we could say that the guy didn't get a chance to tell his family because the angel of death just came and forcibly took his life away, and therefore that's not an inherent flaw that he didn't tell his children, he just didn't get a chance. And therefore the only flaw there is Shtar Chabiyodim Boy. And that we said that that's the Halacha of Rav Chisda, that he's believed with the Migah that he could have said Nensu, so we believe when he says he returned it, and therefore we make the same claim for the orphans too. Now, continue on this Halacha, Shalach Rav Huna Bar Oven. Rav Huna Bar Oven had sent Hamafkid Eitzel Chaver Bishtar, which this is that halacha of that we discussed before Rav Chisda. Someone deposits a deposit by his friend with the documentation. And the one who was watching it said, I already returned it to you. So although there's a document, says Rav Huna Bar Oven, like Rav Chisda, then Neman. So then the Shemer is believed to say he returned it. Another halacha he sent was Bishtar Kis Ayitza Ali Yisayim regarding this documentation of an Isk investment that was with this guy who died, and now the one who gave the money wants to collect it from the orphans. Nishba V'Gayva Kula, he could swear and collect all of it. So now the Gemara asked, Tarti? How can you have these two halachas which contradict each other? Because since you're saying that the Nifgad, the one who was had the deposit, is believed to say that he returned it, so why are you saying that this guy could go ahead and swear and collect all of it, but the father could have claimed that he returned the half of the pekudin, and therefore we always say generally that tanin and luliyasmi, that we make the same claim for the orphans. And that says the Gemara, which was exactly how we explained for the Dayana Gaila just before, that you're right. Generally, holog Rav Chisda's halacha, that a person is believed to say that he returned it. But Shani Hasim, there it's different when it's regards to the orphans, because that we don't make taninan, where although generally we do, because dem isa depari, if it's true that the father had already paid it up, may mehava amr, he would have told his children when he died, and the fact that he didn't, so that's another flaw which weakens their status, and that's why he could swear and collect all of it, and we don't say for them tanin lahu, that it was already returned. Now, Rava Amar, Rava said that Hilchas Halacha is, nishba v'gayva mechza, that the Halacha is that he swears, and he only collects half of it, which is the half of the loan, but the half of the deposit he does not collect because he holds, no, that we are tanin lo liyasmi, that their father returned it, and all they have to do is make a shvus hayarshin, which is that they swear they don't know any way otherwise, and then they're exempt from the half of the pekudin. Mazucha said, halacha is like the yonah geila, who we quoted him before, saying that the one who gave the seed money of the iska actually collects all of it, which is even the half of the deposit. On that, Amalei Ravina L'Mazucha, Ravina asked to Mazucha, how can you say, like the Yonah Gaila, but Amar Rava, which we just quoted before, Rava said, Nishba V'Gayva Mechza, that actually he only swears and collects half of it, which is half of the milvah, not the half of the deposit. So how do you say the halacha is like the Yonah Gaila? So Amalei, so on that Mazucha responded, he says, Anan, the Yonah Gaila, we learned that the opinion of the judges of the diaspora, as we continue to talk about Ayin Alv Manav, was Ibcha Masninla. We learned it the other way around. We had the attribution of the opinions the other way, that it was the Yonah Gaila that they said that he only swears and collects half of it, which that's exactly like Rabbah says. I'm not refuting Rabbah, although I'm saying that Allah is like the Yonah Gaila, although our version that we quoted before was the Yonah Gaila says he could swear and collect all of it, and the Yonah Eretz Yisrael said not. He said his version was the opposite, so therefore when he's saying that Allah is like the Yonah Gaila, it's exactly like Rabbah, which yes, you only swear, he could only swear and collect half of it, because the half of the deposit, he cannot swear and collect, because we make the claim for the orphans, just like the father would be allowed to claim, which is not a problem for Shtachem Yodah Ben Bayu, because he has the migui of Mal Lishakar, he could have said Nensu, and for the fact that, but why didn't the father tell his children at the time of the death? That's not a flaw, as we explained in the Gemara, because maybe the Malach HaMavos came and didn't have a chance to say, and therefore that does not create another flaw, and therefore just like the father would believe, so too the orphans would be believed, and therefore again the lender could only swear regarding the Iska and get back half as money he gave from the orphans, but the half that's a deposit, as we explained from the Ardoins, that's how every Iska is, that he cannot swear and collect from the orphans.